Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Mon.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? We're here. It's exciting. We got big news for you today, and it has nothing to do with Magic the movie.
That's true. No one liked that episode.
People don't like when we talk about Magic the movie.
They're really unhappy about it. This is maybe why they're not really focusing on making Magic the movie.
Yeah, maybe. So, yeah, here we are, guys. It's the Masters of Modern podcast. That was an inside joke from last week's episode, but you know, you've probably listened to that one too, unless you're a new listener. And if that's the case, welcome to the show. Yeah. This is a Masters of Modern. We talk modern here every day. Magic, best game in the world. Modern, the best format. And yeah, that's what we do.
You're a format.
Thanks.
So today, Magic 25 spoilers are coming out.
Yeah.
The preview. I apologize. Previews are coming out, and yep. It's exciting. We got two for you. That's the big thing today. We got two previews, not just one. It's two.
Yeah,
which is kind of what happens when these master sets come out.
Yeah, it's wild that because we're the modern podcast, they don't just give us cards that are cool. They give us modern sweet cards.
Well, sometimes it's also they're commons and uncommons. So these are just commons and uncommons. But in these master sets, the modern relevant commons and uncommons are these both have won multiple Pro Tours. At least one Pro Tour for one, and the other one has won multiples.
They've both at least won a Pro Tour.
Yeah.
Positively, right?
Oh, maybe one hasn't. No one knows what we're talking about.
No, they both have. They definitely both have. We'll talk about
it. They got in second place at a Pro Tour.
They've definitely both won a Pro Tour. Okay. No question. I can tell you which Pro Tours once we get there.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, fun fact, those who don't know, Ben has some weird memory thing that he doesn't really talk about. He knows long lists of things like Pro Tours in this situation. He also can give him any Academy Award year, and he can tell you the winner, director, writer, and best actress, best supporting actress.
It's picture, director, actor, actress, supporting back 70 years. I have an 80% photographic memory. With three repetitions, I've learned that I have 80% memory retention. And that's obviously an estimated number, but that's just something that, yeah. So anyway.
Cool. So he knows, do you know every Pro Tour winner?
No, because it's not a list that I've really committed to memory, but I could probably mostly tell you if you ask me if somebody has or hasn't won one, I'll bet you I'd know. But
so you should add us and let us know if you think Ben should just put the effort to memorize every Pro Tour top 8 of modern history.
It wouldn't take much. It would take a couple hours.
That sounds like a challenge. all right. So before we get into the preview cards that are super epic and awesome and have definitely done a significant amount at tournament play at many levels, we do need to do a little bit of shout outs. First, you should go check out our sister podcast, The Command Zone. They are also on collected.company, which is the website we reside on. Jimmy and Josh do awesome Commander content, but just awesome Magic content. They do game nights. They do all these other stuff on YouTube as well. They're really great. Make sure to check those guys out. Make sure to check out our Patreon. We literally can't do this podcast without it. It pays for equipment when it breaks down. It pays for our ability to play in major tournaments if we have to travel for them, because otherwise we couldn't afford it. And it makes it really just kind of worth making this podcast an effort. So please go check that out. There's a bunch of stuff there, but really it's just about donating to the show, making sure it keeps coming to you for free every week. If you can also check out our Facebook group, a lot of people communicate there. If you check out our Instagram, we post pictures there. Make sure to follow us on Twitter. I am at Kess Wiley.
I am at Ben Bateman Media.
And the whole podcast is at the MMCast.
Yep.
I think that's the majority of things. Oh, make sure to go check out the games we made. You can go to Kess.co, which is the website for my company. You can find Ice Hoops and Drop Dot Balls, which are both really sick and at Target right now, or you can go buy Super Party Battle. I played it again over the weekend, and it's awesome. I forgot how fun that game actually is, even though I made it.
And then the
so
last
you should go play it.
Thing to point out here, and you guys know this, because I mentioned it on last week's sort of weird episode for just a second, but we bit a sad farewell to 10 Minutes of Modern, the Anchor app station that we were doing for a year. I had floated the idea of possibly doing it daily and continuing to do it as a Patreon separate thing. But unfortunately, the rebranding of Anchor as an app, which is amazing for me because I have a movie review station now. I'm officially a film critic, and it's called Nerds in Suits, and you can go find it on there.
Mm.
It's just actually a thing. Download anchor.fm, and you'll find me every day.
He gets into fancy screenings.
I see everything early now. And
it has not taken me to one yet.
Yeah, I invited you. that's awesome, and it's really exciting because if you listen to the show, that you know how much I love movies. But what it does mean is that 10 Minutes of Modern is gone. I don't know that it'll
not because that's replacing it. It's not like Ben is choosing to do one over the other. It's the way that Anchor was supporting Ben in doing either of them has changed. And the format for Masters of Modern and the 10 Minutes of Modern thing doesn't really work, though we are planning to put maybe some of that effort towards. And we don't know yet, but a YouTube channel or a Patreon thing. But for sure, Anchor specifically is probably going away.
There was a reallocation on their part as having only like a few featured partners, and those featured partners needed to not be so niche. So a Magic Modern station paid by them was way, way less relevant than a general movie news and review station, because that's something that any user would find interesting for the most part, versus like you have to know what you're looking for to find a daily piece of content about the modern format and Magic interesting. They have like 12 stations or five. So, but we have talked for a while about doing some YouTube stuff, and it's probably going to happen, and that's probably what you're going to get is some sort of daily thing. So more on that soon.
All right. So beyond that, let's get into the episode. We just say the preview. Do you want to do one at a time? Maybe do one, talk about some of the tournament decks it's been in, why it's important to the format, do the other, talk about the same thing, and then maybe talk about the main strategy that took us an entire week to figure out that they kind of shared, weirdly enough, and discuss that kind of as a strategy in Modern.
That's fair.
So the first one is one that more recently, I believe, won a Pro Tour.
Yep.
Being at, it was in the Pro Tour winning deck of the last tournament, and was one of the cards after that tournament. People were screaming for bans. In fact, I would say both of the cards we have on our episode both have often been asked to be banned.
The other one, far more, but like,
yes, this one recently. It is a color bend, one may say, where it is doing things with colors that generally this color shouldn't be doing, and it's
Simeon Spirit Guide.
Oh, no. That,
oh, yeah, that's right. I said the wrong card.
You said the wrong card.
No!
That's why we're going to talk about that one. People don't know what the other one is.
Okay, so this card didn't actually win a Pro Tour
recently. Yeah, we got everyone. That's...
Yeah.
All right,
funny.
Keep going.
You guys are so confused. I'm so confused.
Should we just stop it and then go back?
No.
Okay. We're going to keep this in here. All right, so the first card we're talking about, Simeon Spirit Guide.
It's early, guys.
It's
I'm
sweet.
Sorry.
You'll see, if you look at collected.company, you can see the artwork. Also, it's on our Twitter and our Facebook. We probably just post the card work everywhere right now if you're listening to this. But the symbol is awesome. I love the new watermark symbols that they're putting on all the cards. They're really, really cool. What can we say about this card? I've multiple times thought that this card is on a watch list for being banned out of Modern. This makes it a little less likely, but
it breaks the fundamental rule, which you're not supposed to be able to have two mana on turn one, but you can with this card.
Well, and in Modern there's like at least five ways I can think of
that they all are in some ways breaking the rule. I mean, this card more so than like some of the other bad ones, because a lot of the other ones are conditional. This one is just like you have an extra mana in your hand, you put yourself down a card. All the other ones are like, if you draw Gemstone Caverns late in the game, it's just a land. And if you draw Chancellor of the Tangle on turn two, you hate your life. And if you don't draw, if you don't put Mox Opal into a deck that supports it fully, you're very constrained with how you can build that card. But this card, in any deck, literally any deck in Magic, as long as you can make use of a red mana on turn one, you can have two mana on turn one. It's like, it's actually the least conditional version of this effect that exists in Modern, and that's why it's on that list, that ban list.
And
the watch list.
There's crazy decks that play this card, and some of them are degenerate. You know, classically, if you're doing something with Simeon Spirit Guide, it's probably not fair.
Right.
But, the other thing is every time the ban conversation comes up, the second deck on the list I'm going to read out is always kind of pointed at as a deck that, like, the world is kind of happy this deck exists. It's really cool. It does something cool. It's never been oppressive because it just loses to a lot itself and a lot of other things. But if you got rid of this card, there's decks that just wouldn't exist anymore. And I think the point, the Pro Tour I was referencing that it won, but it didn't. It got second place. Was the when it was in the Summerbloom decks.
You're forgetting that this card was in, I think, all of the Eldrazi decks. Eldrazi Winter. I'm pretty sure this was in. JT's deck.
You're totally
this won
correct.
The Pro Tour.
Yeah. Okay. So Simeon Spirit Guide won that Pro Tour, but before that, in the Summerbloom era, this was kind of a card that everyone's pointing out because this is the thing that let you do the unfair I win on turn one / turn two versus turn two / turn three plays.
Right.
But in the end, it looked like, especially at that era, there was people that were kind of cheating to make that happen as consistently as it was happening with Simeon Spirit Guide. And so once that was kind of caught, they cut the Simeon Spirit Guides to make it a less consistent thing.
It is funny that like people go in and out of using this card, justifying how good it really is versus being like,
It's inherently card disadvantage.
Yeah, and it's also one of those things when you think about it where you go, okay, every single deck in Modern would love to play a turn faster. So, like, there's almost no deck you can think of in Modern that, like, given the opportunity to have this in the opening hand, if you were to say to them, like, hey, you'll always start with six cards, but you'll always have access to an extra mana on turn one, every deck in Modern would just do it.
Sure.
But that's not the point. It doesn't necessarily just make your deck better to have the chance to do it. It's such a bad top deck. It's such a bad top deck in almost every deck that, like, it's just not worth the putting this in a Jund deck just so you can, like, I don't know, like, play Tarmogoyf on turn one.
Sure.
Like, it's just...
And right now the deck I was talking about before that wouldn't be able to exist without Simeon Spirit Guide is Ad Nauseam. Ad Nauseam is a deck that's really cool that exists. If you look at the most recent decks that are using this Simeon Spirit Guide are the most common ones. Ad Nauseam is one of the main ones. And the other main one is Living End. Those are like the decks that just use this card. And those decks kind of wouldn't work as well if this card didn't exist. And neither of those decks are like, man, I really don't think Ad Nauseam and Living End should be in Modern. They're just like decks that exist. They're really cool. And so Simeon Spirit Guide lets those decks exist differently in both decks. In Living End, it just allows Living End to go off a little bit earlier.
I mean, it's in Living End, really what you're looking for with that card is like, you pretty much want to have, like, a Cycler on turn one and a Street Wraith, and then you want to just, like, turn two Demonic Dread and get, like, two big fatties on turn two.
Right.
And that's, like, the theory. You're basically a Hollow One deck. You're just, like, I want as much, like, fat on the table on turn two as I can.
Right.
And that's why you would do
it. And Simeon's probably lets you do it. And Ad Nauseam, the deck literally can't exist without it because the way it wins is with Lightning Storm.
Conflagrate?
No.
Which one?
It's the one where
Conflagrate's Dredge.
Lightning Storm, where you have to draw your whole deck and you have to discard enough lands, but once you draw your whole deck with Ad Nauseam, you need the Simeon Spirit Guide to be able to cast
Lightning Storm.
Yeah. Otherwise, the deck just doesn't work. And so without Lightning Storm, the deck might find a different win condition, but I think it would be a significantly worse deck for a deck that has never been better than Tier 2.
It's funny that like Spirit Guide is not only is it like a color bend because it's red... Well, actually, red does get rituals, so that's probably why it was okay to do it.
Yeah, I don't think it's a color bend anymore.
But it's a color bend. It was a color bend at the time, and it came from Elvish Spirit Guide. A lot of you guys know this probably because it's like, you know, if you put Legacy or Modern, you probably know about it. But this was originally a card printed in Alliances, and it was the same card. It was an elf, and you would exile to add one green, and they printed Simeon Spirit Guide all these years later as a red card, and that's what we've had in Modern. But we don't have Elvish Spirit Guide.
Well, and if you look at like I have the Legacy decks that play Simeon Spirit Guide, and it's like mono red sneak attack, Eldrazi Stompy, Eldrazi Post. You know, Belcher is the big one that plays both Simeon Spirit Guide and Elvish Spirit Guide to great effect. And like I don't think you want too many of these effects in format. I don't want Belcher to ever be good enough, I guess is the point.
Where do you think Spirit Guide is best served in Modern? Like, where do you think it's like most effective?
Ad Nauseam. Well, I mean, I guess what do you mean by most effective? Because there's two places I think it's most effective. There's the place where literally the deck doesn't exist without it, which means it is the linchpin card of that deck in many ways, and I would say that's Ad Nauseam. Or there's probably the most common way it's used in modern history, period, which is getting a Chalice of the Void on turn one.
That's the one I was going to go for.
And I think that's the second most common. I think it's the most common place it exists. It might not be the most efficient way of using it because it's...
We were trying to do that on this podcast. You probably don't remember this. The first episode I was ever on, we brewed a Grand Architect deck.
Oh, that was putting Simeon Spirit Guide with Grand Architect and Chalice?
Yes. And that was my thing, was like, we're going to play a straight-up Architect deck with four Chalice of the Void and four Spirit Guide.
You've randomly just jammed Chalice and Spirit Guide into a lot of different decks. And you know, the little bit of the secondary half of this episode we're going to talk about is White-Red Prison decks. Or prison decks in general, and white red is, you know, kind of been bouncing around the Sun and Moon deck that everyone stopped calling that, even though I thought the name was great.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have Blood Moon and you have Chalice, and if you get Chalice on one, so they can't play one drops, and you get Blood Moon on turn three or turn two with Simeon Spirit Guide, getting either of those cards into play earlier than they need to, a lot of opponents can't deal with that, and it's really powerful.
Yeah, prison decks are really interesting. There'll be some interesting prison decks to talk about here on this episode, so we can expand on that a little bit. But I think probably before that, should we preview our second card?
Sure.
It's Simeon Spirit Guy.
Elvish Spirit Guy. That'd be fun if they had both of them.
Yeah, I would love to have. Actually, would Modern break if we had Elvish Spirit Guy and Simeon Spirit Guy?
I don't think it would be good for Modern.
If you could play eight of those effects?
I think you can play Charbelcher. I think Charbelcher actually becomes a deck thing.
I just think the number of decks that could get it would be almost... If you had eight ways to do it, then I think you would start to be like a mental misstep format where like... Basically, like, turn one Chalice with eight of those, it would be, like, a very common thing that would just happen.
Yeah. And turn one Chalice would be a very common activity in the format.
And, like, it would change Modern. Yeah, it would be horrible. I think it'd be awful.
I would like not to do that. Okay, so this card is the color bend I was talking about before, even though you snuck in with your Simeon Spirit Guide spoil. Yeah. It did just win the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
It was being discussed as a card that should be banned recently, and it's Ancient Stirrings.
Yes, the green cantrip.
So for those who don't know what this card does, I guess Simeon Spirit Guide, you don't know. It's a 2/2 for 3. You exile it. You can make a red mana from your hand. You can exile it from your hand to make one red mana.
Yep.
Ancient Stirrings is one green. Look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may reveal a colorless card from among them and put that card into your hand. Then put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. People have said that this is the best cantrip in Modern, and I don't know if I disagree with them. It's been in the back of all Tron decks forever, Eldrazi decks.
So years ago, before you and I had this podcast, we were driving back from a GP, like GP San Diego, maybe it was something. And
was it Modern focused?
Yeah.
Then it was GP San Diego.
And we got into this conversation about this.
The
like,
Jotun Grunt GP.
You played that card?
Yeah, in my main deck.
I remember
I'm an idiot.
Yeah. A 4/4.
Never
four.
Make deck building decisions at 7 in the morning before a tournament.
Yeah, that the old 4/4 for 2.
Yeah, it's the white Tarmogoyf.
You should have been playing Sheltering Ancient. That's a much better.
That's the tournament that Eggs won.
Yeah.
Brian Kibler F6'd and went to the bathroom as a judge watched his opponent
I remember that.
Play Eggs.
So on the way back from that tournament, you and I got into a conversation about building this Abzan Hate Bears deck that we thought was cool. It was like we wanted to put Deathrite Shaman in it, and we put 4 Ancient Stirrings in the deck because we wanted to have Swords and Crucible of Worlds. What a weird deck. And like Ghost Quarters. Do you remember this?
Yep. I remember the biggest issues that we were like high on the guy Leonin Arbiter.
Yeah.
But also high on Fetchlands, which is not a thing that works.
We were trying to do both. Yeah.
But Ancient Stirrings. Basically the use of this card generally is to find Eldrazi in life, which is not ironic, but the card was printed originally in Rise of the Eldrazi, so that makes sense. But Tron makes great use out of this card as its main way of kind of filtering for threats that it needs. You had it in the Eldrazi decks. You have it now in Eldrazi decks. Red-green Eldrazi decks are just won a GP this last weekend or 2 weekends ago, I believe.
I was just watching. I was just watching Brad Nelson play one of those versus matchups. The channel SCG channel SCG one of those things. The versus series.
Sure.
And he was playing this deck versus turns, and it's the green red Eldrazi deck. Sweet. It's good. It plays a lot of acceleration, talismans, and. Mm-hmm. All that stuff. Mind sounds.
And the thing it won in the Pro Tour is it's played in Lantern. Because Lantern is almost all colorless cards, so this allows you to find the bridge you need or a Lantern of Insight. So, it's definitely a really powerful card that's seeing a lot of play. And right off the Pro Tour, everyone's like, oh, there's no green shouldn't have the access to this good of a cantrip. How is Preordained banned and not Ancient Stirrings? Blah, blah, blah.
I would
blah,
argue
blah.
That the most significant function that this card has ever had in Modern is to get Serum Bridge, because like
it's to get Tron pieces. It has to be.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I mean, it's because inevitably in the Lantern deck you will draw into your Lanterns, but the Ensnaring Bridge is what makes that deck work.
Sure.
Like I think if they kill Ensnaring Bridge, that deck's just dead. I don't think you can play that deck.
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
I think that Ancient Stirrings, most recently, it's the most powerful thing it was probably doing, but I think if you look at the overall history,
classically,
kind of like what you just described is the Through the Breach, not Through the Breach, is the...
Is the
ad nauseum part of Simeon Spirit Guide versus, like, I think the most common use being red-white, you get a Chalice of the Void on turn one, is Ancient Stirring, finding Tron pieces. Every Tron deck... except for Mono Blue Tron, but most Tron decks in the history of Tron have played Ancient Stirrings because it's just such an efficient way to find the land you need or a threat you need. So you get either one.
Yeah.
And so it does a lot of things that that deck needs to be doing. And it's just a really good card, and it's exciting to see it come back. A deck that we didn't mention with Simeon Spirit Guide, actually, to go back to that, that I remembered, is Grishalbrand decks. And that was kind of the first deck that took advantage of Simeon Spirit Guide to, like, do the turn two kill, where you would turn one, or turn two, Simeon Spirit Guide to loot away with Faithless Looting, an Emrakul put into your graveyard, and then immediately Gory's Vengeance at instant speed with the mana you have.
No, you're mixing up decks there. The turn one was you would Faithless Looting, putting Grishalbrand in your graveyard, and then turn two, you would... Oh, no, actually, that's just a regular turn two win. You don't need Spirit Guide for it. You just do that. Spirit Guide just allows you to...
Well, you don't win by having Grishalbrand in play. You win by getting Emrakul in play.
With that deck? No, that deck's the Nourishing Shoal one.
That's Grishalbrand.
You said Grishalbrand.
Okay, there's two versions of that deck. The original version of that deck was the basic version, and the best thing it could do was Emrakul on turn two.
Right.
I think technically it could do Emrakul on turn one was the thing where you do one red.
Yeah.
Faithless Looting, Simeon Spirit Guide again with the swamp you had in play to play.
And you Lava Spike.
Gory's Vengeance.
And you Lava Spike them for 15, and then they play their first land.
Yeah. Or hopefully it's on your turn. You're on the play so that you drew a card and you get to make them sack that first land they played.
Like, if you're on the play and then they go to their turn and then they crack a fetch, then it's like they just beat you at two. You just don't do anything else the rest of the game.
that deck eventually turned into the Grixis versions of the deck, the Grixis Gory's Vengeance decks that are playing Jace, Fringe Prodigy, and have Snapcat. You know, they have different ways to kind of do that. And then there's the Grishalbrand decks that also have that kind of game plan, but they get Grishalbrand in the play, draw a bunch of cards, use Nourishing Shoal to gain a bunch of life, draw a bunch of cards, use Nourishing Shoal to gain a bunch of life, draw a bunch of cards. And then get Borogamos into play.
Borogamos
using those Simeon Spirit Guides that they have in their hand and kill their opponent.
Sweet.
So
you're a Grishalbrand.
So I love that deck. Yeah. But Ancient Stirrings, Simeon Spirit Guide in M25. Get hyped.
Yeah.
You can literally, with these two cards and the mythic that they spoiled previewed earlier this week, being Chalice of the Void, find that chalice on turn one and then... Turn two, play Chalice. Or on turn one, just play Chalice. A lot of ways to get Chalice in the play on turn one and two.
Did you see the other spoiler this morning? The land?
Ridge? The land.
Yeah. Rishadin Port at rare.
Oh, I did not see that. That's crazy.
Right?
That's crazy.
Yeah,
Rishadin Port has needed a reprint for a long time.
Rare, though. That's like...
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like that's going to just decimate the price of that card. At rare?
Maybe.
That's like, I mean,
people are talking about this set. The set is really swinging in value. Like, half the set's worth a lot, and then half the set is worth like nothing. And so,
Niv-Mizzet the Firemind.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Rishadin Port. I wonder what is a Rishadin Port from Masks worth right now? $95. It's worth $95. That's gonna be like a $30 or $20 card by the end of this. Less even.
So now let's talk about a little bit of the deck subject of the day, so that we have a little bit more than just talking about the cards we're previewing.
Yeah, seems like a good plan.
And I think the best way to kind of going about that is, you know, prison decks is what we're really looking at, because both of these cards are used in combo decks. Ancient Stirrings is not as much. Like, the last combo deck it was used in, it was played in, both of these decks were played in the Summer Bloom decks. So, but I think really the cards you're looking at that are really important to talk about are Red White Prison and Lantern Control.
Yeah, I mean, let's start with Red White Prison, because there's been like sort of some interesting versions of this pop up recently, and I think this brings to mind a point that I've mentioned on the podcast before, and you and I have talked about before, which is that Eldrazi decks, because of Eldrazi Temple, they lean into the idea of playing their threats early. That's like the whole idea of having Eldrazi Temple. So it's like, you've seen a lot of these Hate Bears decks recently now, like Eldrazi Hate Bears. There's like blue based ones, there's white black ones, there's all different versions. What Spirit Guide has done is, I saw recently this red-white like Eldrazi Prison deck pop up, and it's playing like 3 Gemstone Caverns, 4 Simeon Spirit Guide, 4 Temple, and it's gone beyond just playing 4 Chalice on turn, or 4 Chalice. It plays Thalia, like 4 Thalia.
Mm-hmm.
It's like literally trying to go, what's the most disruptive thing I can do on turn 1? Like, how can I get a turn ahead to slow my opponent down and then kill them with a threat? And, like, that's, to me, the most interesting thing I've seen recently with Spirit Guide is just people sort of combining these two ideas in the same way that people combined Eldrazi Tron and regular Tron. And it was like, well, but, you know, you don't really want your Eldrazi Temple trying to cast a Karn, but it's like, who cares? It's just a land. You'll draw the best half of your deck most of the time. It's the same with this. It's like, sometimes you'll draw the Eldrazi half, sometimes you'll just draw the prison half. But it's not like the crossover is that different.
Well, and the Eldrazi half, a lot of the Eldrazi half is pretty hatebearing. I mean, like, Thought Not Seer is real good in that type of archetype where it's like, oh, man, I'm going to be able to cast this one thing that'll maybe get me back there because they're locking out all these other things I can do. Because I can cast this thing, I'm going to get there. And they're like, oh, Thought Not Seer.
Yeah, what's funny about the Thought Not Seer plan is, like, it's, like, ultimately the best two drop in the deck. Because it's like you have a soul land and all these other ways. You have a soul land and spirit guides. You can just turn two Thought Not Seer with like some regularity.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is what that card always wants, you know?
Right. Right. I asked Twitter to give us a little bit of some breakdowns of what they define a prison deck as, and I wanted to read some of them out loud. Jim Cassell, at Frost _,
the quotes.
We have the PH. Quotes, can I do things? _, if yes, _, then it's not a prison deck.
Fair.
Group hug for people who don't like group hug.
Group hug?
Group hug is like a commander strategy where you're trying to be nice to everyone. It's like the reverse of group hug. It's like no one can do anything instead of everyone gets to do a lot of things. Crowley at Joel P _Crowley flipping the table ?
Yeah, prison decks.
Josh at Flareane making the opponent's relevant cards to winning the game irrelevant through various permanents that make them virtually unable to win or play Magic. A prison deck makes your opponent unable to do things. Contrast against a control deck where your opponent can try to do things.
Right. You allow them to do what you want to allow them to do versus the other one, which is like, the whole advantage of playing a prison deck, why people like playing prison decks is that it's the most proactive, like, I'm going to do this thing, and then it doesn't really matter if I have action the next turn because you're not going to have action. So I'll just draw and draw and draw until I draw something that can kill you because you won't be able to do anything. It's like ultimately kind of lazy because it allows you to not have to interact very much.
It's classically, you know, it's one of the things people are most annoyed to play against by, I find, often. Yeah. And, like, there's always the story of, like, these are the most unfun things in Magic, and it goes land destruction, counterspells, discard.
Yeah.
And sometimes counterspells and discard are switched.
Right.
Because, they all feel like you're taking the opponent. People always feel like it's better to have their creature killed on board than they ever feel like it's fun to have, like, them unable to cast their creature. And so for whatever reason, these are strategies that have been kind of locked out. But prison decks kind of take advantage in different ways to accomplish those things. You know, red-white prison decks are trying to do Chalice into Blood Moon with a Thalia in play in the middle of their Alina and Arbiter in there to make it so your opponent, like, can't use their lands. It's turning their lands off in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, the Lantern Control deck makes it so your creatures can't attack, and then makes it so nothing on top of your deck that could ever be relevant to you winning is going to be available to you by being able to look at it and mill cards that come up that are relevant. And often prison decks are also decks that kill you slowly. It's not like I got a combo, you can never play the game again. It's you think you might have a chance to try and come back at some point. Let me keep locking you out as the game goes on and on.
It's the slow burn. God, it's slow.
and there's an argument if these things are healthy for the format, but I kind of think they are. I think, like, a prison deck is something that there's always going to be prison decks because they're always going to eventually print enough cards that kind of make that happen. Even if we ban Lantern Control out of the format, people are going to come from left field and be like, okay, red-white prison is a thing. And then if they get rid of that, there's going to be black-white Eldrazi prison. And if they get rid of that, like, there's so many, like, they'd have to ban, to get rid of prison decks in the format, Thalia, Leon and Arbiter, Blood Moon,
Chalice, Magus of the Moon,
Blood Sun. Now, that six cards, and if they
really
don't ban all six of those, there's going to be prison decks still in the format.
Have we seen any Blood Sun decks yet?
No, I think Blood Sun has done almost nothing in Modern,
which is crazy. Yeah. I'm so surprised by that.
Yeah,
it'll pop up. It'll.
It still surprises me that it draws a card.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's great. I've been saying we should just be playing that with Felidar Guardian. That seems great. That seems so good.
Why don't you make the deck?
Maybe I will.
Take it to a GP.
Maybe I would. Yeah.
GP Phoenix coming up.
Are you kidding? Playing a proactive deck that actually can do things to win the game? I would never take that to a GP.
I don't think that what we described as a prison deck. I feel like that's not proactive.
No. If it's not playing Flame Jab, I don't want to play it.
You could play Flame Jab.
Flame Jab, Boom Bust. These are the cards that you take to GPs.
Boom Bust isn't bad.
Yeah, Boom Bust is great.
If you're playing Flagstones?
Yeah, I you know that I took... This was the weird prison deck that I took to San Antonio.
Well.
Debatable. I mean, I won almost 50% of matches around that.
That's good for you.
Yeah. Oh, that's really nice. I had a conversation with Roxy recently, and the conversation went something like, so I just played some games of Magic with Alex, and she was like, how'd you do? These were like games we jammed in New York last week, just like whatever. And I was like, I played this dumb deck I'm trying to work on. I lost 5 in a row. And she like paused. She was like, you really lose a lot. Just like, thank you.
I feel great about it.
I'm sure you do.
I was playing my Jund deck, but with Bloodbraid Elves, but yeah. Still have Life of the Loam.
Bloodbraid's really good.
That's so good. Bloodbraid and Jace, happy about it. Yeah. Speaking of Jace, that's the other kind of big card that goes in the prison strategies. If anything, it makes them stronger because now you once you lock it out, Jace is a way to kind of lock the game out and Fate Seal your opponent. It's kind of a prison deck. It's kind of doing what Lantern was doing on one card versus Lantern's whole strategy. Now, a lot of people thought Jace would see play in Lantern. I don't think that's going to happen.
Maybe. I mean,
I think maybe in the sideboard, but like, what does Jace do that the deck already just isn't doing?
Yeah, it's just a four-drop that you're adding in. Like, I don't think... Jace is really powerful, and I definitely saw some stuff. I have some videos that have now popped up, and it's great to see Jace in Modern, and it's going to totally kind of, like, warp the format to have cards that can deal with Jace, but...
I don't know. Like, I don't... I mean, obviously, people are going to have to play answers, but my experience with it so far is that it's fine.
It's, like, fair.
It's probably better than some of the other cards that they've unbanned, but it's not much better.
You don't think it's as bad as the Troll unbanning?
I think the Troll unbanning, in the long run, did more of an unhealthy thing than the Jace's unban will do. And I don't think Bloodbraid Elf is going to do anything to the format. I think
the Troll unbanning, I remember, like, was... I felt like it was kind of innocuous, and I was surprised that they rebanned it. I mean, the Dredge deck was powerful, but I didn't remember, like... Am I just misremembering that? Like, leading up to it, was Dredge the only thing people were playing? Or was it just...
Dredge and Infect were, like, very... probably problematic. I think Dredge was just the best deck in the format, and Wizards just doesn't ever want Dredge to be the best deck in the format.
Right,
because it's not Magic. It's Dredge, which is a different way. It's like Solitaire, you know?
Yeah, right.
Versus... And then Infect was also just, like... Selly too powerful, and they wanted to take a little bit out of Death Shadow, so yeah. They were trying to just do something with that. So that was kind of what they were trying to get to. So the next thing is there's a comment on our official Masters of Modern Facebook group that I wanted to read because it does have an interesting conversation, especially where everyone was at emotionally after the Pro Tour. And it's the trifecta of Moon, Bridge, and Talus are all in A25, not to mention Richard Import. Wizard of the Coast says, ban Lantern. We actually want Prison to be more accessible. Thoughts? Should we expect Trinisphere in the set two now too as well?
It's kind of funny that Trinisphere doesn't see more play. We've talked about this on the podcast before.
It's just not a thing. Yeah, I don't know, because there's not enough Soul Lands, I think.
I guess so,
to barely get it in earlier. Like, you need... Maybe if there was Elvish Spirit Guides as well.
It's weird, though, because it's just a 3-drop, and people play Blood Moon. So, right. Like, yeah.
But, like, add these two cards to this list, there's definitely an argument that Wizards is saying, you know, Prison Dex is a thing people should be doing in Modern. Do you think that's problematic? Do you like that that's a thing that's happening?
I think that
more
there's
of this, or should we kind of be rallying against it?
Let's call it what it is. This set is not entirely being introduced to reduce the cost of buy into Modern. That's not really what this was about. Some of the cards, it's about that. Some of these cards that are getting reprints, like Imperial Recruiter, that's not a card that's going to be in Modern. It's just like a card they wanted people to be able to have in their hands.
But Masters of Sets exist now, especially now that they're being sold in the Walmart and Target and stores like that. Exist to depreciate the cost of cards. Like, that's why they started doing them. Modern Masters 1, the first Masters set,
which is like
excluding the online Masters sets, which were also technically about this, came out as a response to we created Modern to make it easily more accessible for people to play Eternal formats, and because of the reserve list, actual Eternal formats can't be that, so we created Modern to jump over that, which means that we'll be able to reprint sets. Here is a set we're reprinting. Go.
Modern won. Modern Masters won the EV is like through the roof, right?
It's crazy.
It's like insane.
And like they learned a better balance to that. They also learned to raise their SRP. You know, there was mistakes they made on that was great for us
as
people. But this set and Iconic Masters before that, you know, they are meant to increase card availability and make Modern less expensive and other formats less expensive to get into. Gavin on Verhey did a Reddit post 1 week ago, specifically talking about the future of Master sets. And his statement was, it's not unlikely that we do a Modern Master set again, but moving forward, Master sets are going to be much more thematic based than format specific. So from this point on, kind of the idea is we're going to get stuff like Iconic, where it was like, we're doing dragons and demons and angels. Now we're doing Masters 25, which is an anniversary set. So there's going to be a card from every set in the entire thing. And there's going to be a lot of some older cards, some newer cards.
What's the Homelands reprint?
We don't know yet.
Sweet. Spectral Bears.
probably Brainstorm.
It's not from Homelands. It's from Ice Age.
Oh. What's the best card in Homelands?
That's a good question.
You look that up while I keep talking. That's what these sets are about. So Wizards is definitely making a much more slowed down and controlly Modern, a more accessible format. Because there's a lot of these cards that locked people out from playing. You could not play some of these decks because they were expensive. And now players have an easier chance of possibly getting their hands on these cards. Is this something that we want to see in Modern, or something you're excited about, or is it something you're maybe a little bit resistant to, especially because prison strategies so often are disliked by the community?
I think the answer is that I'm okay, like you were just a second ago, to have prison decks in Modern. I don't think it's a problem. I don't think so far that it feels like Lantern is really a problem. I'm okay with it existing. I think if it was to continue winning at a high level, I would probably have issues with it. But as it stands right now, I'm okay with it. As far as the response to the Master sets and everything, and Wizards sort of printing these cards and everything, I don't love that idea that Master sets are going to exist the way you're talking about. I think that that's fine. I liked it better when we had the Modern Masters idea that every couple of years we would get this Modern specific set. The Iconic Masters, Eternal Masters, like, it's fun. We've had a couple. I'm definitely excited about the EV on this set. There's some really cool stuff in it. I don't want Magic's whole entirety of its sweetest cards to just all start being depreciated. And I think we're already at a breaking point. I don't think after this one, I don't want to see another Master set for a couple of years, and I know that's not the case.
Well, I think we had Master set fatigue, and I think last year was an example of that where we had two a year. I think they've also stated that they're going to slow down and do it more likely once a year. Now, they're obviously working really hard, even with the new standard decks that they're coming out with, to make Magic much more accessible for people kind of jumping into the field. But if you look at Master sets, likely we're going to be getting at least one a year moving forward. And their focus is no longer going to be, this is for Modern, this is for Legacy. It's going to be the Tribal Master set. You know, if you look at other products they've done in the past, they were much more themed. The Artifact Master set, and going that route, doing something kind of akin to what they were kind of doing with Masterpieces, but they don't have the same limitations of it has to make sense on the plane they're on. It can just be any good artifact in Magic history, or, you know, we can do a set that's any good Tribal card.
So the answer to the question about Homelands,
yeah,
and this is insane because I legitimately you go back to old sets that are panned and you're like, there's got to be four cards that people remember from that set.
Sure, and sometimes it's like they've been reprinted, like Ice Age has Brainstorm, and it has Necroponents, so it has two of these insane cards. They just were also reprinted 10 times, so the pack of Ice Age is valueless. But Homelands has
Memory Lapse, Merchant Scroll. Those are the two best cards printed.
Merchant Scrolls is pretty good.
Yeah, Merchant Scrolls is a real card. Yeah. It's worth $3.35. If you open a pack of, you can probably buy a pack of Homelands for 99 cents right now. I'll bet you.
Maybe a little less for the value of people doing dumb drafts.
On Hava Constable, it's worth 35 cents. Spectral Bears, it's in the set. I was right. That exists.
My guess is that it's Merchant Scroll.
By far, it's got to be Merchant Scroll. Memory Lapse is a sweet card, but as established by the conversation that I had recently on the now defunct 10 Minutes of Modern station about two drop counter spells. Everybody's just like, even if that existed in Modern, people would probably just like play Remand. It's like delay's almost better.
Yeah.
And like that, so Merchant Scroll's the card. So there you go. I'm okay with like, I like that Magic is more accessible. There is an element to Modern and Legacy in any format that's like an expert level format, even Commander to some degree, though I know like Commander is like a little bit more let's have fun with our cards than those others. It's not like I'm going to pimp out my four ofs of everything in my deck. It's like a different feeling. But even with Commander to some degree.
I mean, there is a high level of premiumizing your deck status in Commander.
Yeah, I'm not saying people don't do it, but I'm just saying there's this level of pride of like you've invested something into this game and you want the thing that you have sleeved up to feel like it has value to you. It's not exciting when you feel like every few months or every 6 months, every year, there's a high likelihood that your investment's just going to be worth a little less and a little less and a little less. There's supposed to be a balance.
Well, but the other hand of that is Modern became the most popular format in Magic over the that competitive format in Magic over the last 2 years. And when that happened, we were in a world where if they weren't these master sets, that A, probably wouldn't have happened. I think the reason Modern became as popular as it did is because people gained more access to it with master sets. And B, the cards that they gained access to are, you know, the popularity of it would have made it impossible for anyone to buy into without these master sets releases. If you couldn't get these cards for... Ben found my fidget cube. They're amazing. It's really cool. I recommend it to everyone. If we could be sponsored by fidget cubes and make it happen. It's not like a fidget spinner that's annoying. You can do this and like be subtle about it. But back to what I was talking about. Give it to me. We are in a situation where I think the only way Modern is at the popularity that is today and the health that it is at today could not have happened without master sets and the large amount of master sets that we printed. Remember, 4 years ago, people were being like, Modern's too expensive. This is crazy. How dare these cards be $70? And now
people
everyone's
still
like,
say that.
Right. So that problem hasn't been fixed. And if Wizards needs to sell packs, this is a way to sell packs. This is a way to sell packs directly to Modern players.
Could be worse.
Because they don't make money on the back end. Now we need to make sure store... That's the other end of this, and I discussed this online with people earlier this week, but if Wizards were to print every card into the ground, just every card's common, ever printed, and we just make everything worth exactly a dollar, Magic would die. And it wouldn't die because investors or people lose the value of their collection. It would die because every local game store in the country would go out of business overnight. That's who gets hurt by these price depreciations. People always think it's like shady Magic finance dudes who are in a corner trying to make it happen, but the people that get hurt are stores that are like, you know what, I'm a local card game store, I every month barely make rent because the Magic card the Gathering community isn't It's not a model that you're making tons of money on generally, unless you're doing eBay sales. As I do this, the reason people come to my store is because I have good draft prices. My price support is really good. I have a cool community, and I have these cards that I've bought and have invested in to offer to my community a way for them to be able to buy the cards they need. And that is 90% of the profit I make is off of that case of cards. And the right. moment you make all of that worthless is the moment that that store no longer has profit. If you do the math for a store and see how much money they make on a draft, it's nothing.
Yeah, it's almost nothing. It's just to get people in the door.
Like, so, and private players, because other stores are out there and because they're making their money off of singles, the what people accept for a cost of the draft is rarely going to be more than $15. If I have to pay more than $15 for a draft, I'm going to be salty about it.
Yep.
And I'm nice. I'm a nice person.
Totally.
So the situation you run in there is you have to have singles have a value. And so there's going to be a need to be a fine balance between those two things.
Yeah.
Now, last thing,
yep.
If you were to play any deck with both of these cards, what do you play?
What would it be?
Yeah. Ancestral Vision, Simeon Spirit Guide. Now remember, Chalice is really bad with Ancestral Vision.
Ancient Stirrings.
Yeah. Chalice is really bad with Ancient Stirrings.
Yeah, for sure. I think probably what I would do would be instead of going for like the Tron deck, I would probably... No, that doesn't really work because you really want to be playing Chalice. I would probably try to build some sort of land destruction, Crucible of the Worlds type of deck.
Okay.
like an LD Crucible deck that's taking advantage of like maybe it's Blood Sun, maybe it's like I don't know what I'm doing necessarily with this because Blood Sun with fetches is horrible. But like I would try to find Crucible.
I don't think you play fetchables with this. I think because you have Ancient Stories, you don't need fetches.
Yeah, well, Crucible really wants you to play fetches, but
sure.
I would probably do something like that because I think searching for. Obviously, like getting Ghost Quarters and getting lands with Ancient Stirrings is sweet. Getting Crucible with Ancient Stirrings is super sweet. And Crucible's a 3-drop, so getting it into play a turn early is great. And I think I don't really know why Spirit Guide would be in that deck necessarily. But
I have my answer.
What do you got?
Summer Bloom.
Oh, you would just play Summer Bloom.
Yeah, I think that's the best deck that uses both of these cards in the format, thinking about it even now.
Because you can get packs are colored cards. They're not colored.
No, but you can get all the lands you need. You get bounce lands. You get the lands that activate it to give Primeval Titan haste. You get Teleria West. You get all of these. You get the one that gains you life. So you have all your lands that you get access to with Ancient Stirrings. And then you get,
that's fair.
Simeon Spirit Guide's good in that deck because you get the cast Azusa on turn two.
That's totally fair.
Yeah, I think that'd be the direction I'd go. All right, so I think that's it for the episode today.
Yeah. Sweet. I guess the other deck maybe that I would play would be a non-Chalice Architect deck because I like the idea of a turn two Architect. Like
a teamer tech? Teamer Architect?
Well, something just because like Architect wants you to have colorless 2-drops that you can cast off of it the turn that you play it. So having Spirit Guide means you can cast those on turn one when you have them in your opening hand, like whether it's like a piece of acceleration, like a talisman or something like that. I think that's really, really cool. And then also, if you're playing that deck, you're probably playing like some number of sweet artifacts. So Ancient Stirrings becomes like a really solid dig five on turn one to set up your turn three or your turn two kind of deal.
I actually really like that. I think Ancient Stirrings on turn one getting you an artifact that on turn two you can cast Architect with Spirit Guide and cast that artifact is like totally sweet.
Yeah.
Or you can use the Spirit Guide to play that two drop artifact on turn one.
Yeah.
It becomes a much more like 2-drop based artifact deck, but that could be totally sweet.
Yeah.
Into it. Teamer, Simeon Spirit Guide, Ancient Stirrings, Duran Architect, the deck. Everyone start brewing it. Post it on our Facebook. Go to the official Masters of Modern Facebook. And Ben will critique it and work with you on it there. Also follow us on Twitter. We are at the MMCast. I am at Kes Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
Make sure to follow us on Instagram and everything else. We're all at the MMCast there as well. Big thing is we've been doing a contest and we're going to do it all the spring and the end of spring will happen. But we're going to give sweet Masters of Modern packs or Modern Masters packs to probably Modern Masters 3, but Modern Masters packs to people that tweet on Instagram using hashtag Masters the MMCast Kesco, and you go to a Target and you take a picture of yourself with a drop-top ball or an ice hoop. They're in the spring summer aisle. They're cool. I'm selling them. They're fun. Go check them out. Lastly, we're going to do a Kickstarter probably in April for a new game we're coming out with, but also go check out Super Party Battle. It's on thinkgeek.com. It's really fun. It's like really fun.
Sweet.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.